You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, powered by Diaga.ie and proudly sponsored by Flomax. Be sure to check out our brand new website, BetweenTheStripes.ie, while you can find us on Twitter at Between Stripes or on Facebook by searching Between the Stripes. Now, here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone, and you're all very welcome to Series 2, Episode 15 of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. We had a manager special last week. This week, we give the fans the power here on the Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's a fan special as we speak to fans from Cork City, Dundalk, Galway United and Finn Harps, and we will reveal those guests to you shortly. But what a week it's been in the League of Ireland, folks. We have to start by talking about Damian Delaney. The former Crystal Palace man has signed for Cork City. Unbelievable stuff. In Galway then, talks of a Saudi Arabia-based takeover. In Dundalk, there's talks of Patrick McIlhenny returning to the club, although that's starting to look a little bit more likely in recent days. And on tonight's show, as always, we'll have the reviews from the weekend, previews to the weekend's action, and our St. Mel's prediction game. This is your host, Kieran Burke. Tonight, unfortunately, John Breyer away on a well-deserved break, so it's just myself tonight. But as I said, we're joined on the show tonight by Adrian Taff from LMFM. He's going to give us the rundown on all things Dundalk. Finn Harp Supermac Aidan McNeils joins us, as does Rebel Radio's Kevin Galvin, who will give us the latest on that huge signing for Cork City. And finally, we'll be joined by our expert Galway United pundit Julian Canny, who was on the show many times last season, and he joins us again tonight to give us the scoop on that huge news that Galway United looks set for a Saudi Arabia based takeover. For anyone that missed our Facebook Live intro, we've just completed our World Cup sweepstakes draw in aid of Pieta House, so do check out that video. It was a good bit of fun. Unfortunately, I ended up with Iran. But we're going to crack straight into the show by looking at the results from the weekend, starting in the Premier Division, where Shamrock Rovers were 5-0 winners against Bray Wanderers, Martin Russell's first game in charge of the Seagulls. The big story from this one, of course, was Gavin Bazunu starting in goals for Shamrock Rovers, aged just 16. A goalkeeper with huge potential. I've heard whispers about him earlier in the season when things weren't going well there for Chinchinski and Horgan that he may be brought in, but I think the general feeling among supporters was that he was just too young to come in for a league game. But Stephen Bradley, he's taken a lot of criticism this season, but I think credit where credit is due, he gave the young man a start and he certainly didn't let him down. A clean sheet on Gavin Bazunu's debut. But this game, the turning point came after just 4 minutes. Conor Kenna sent off for handball inside the area. Graham Burke, returning from international duty, he stepped up to convert 1-0 to Shamrock Rovers. It was soon 2-0 when Sam Bone scored a bullet of an effort. 3-0 when Burke scored his 12th goal of the season, his 10th at the Tallaght Stadium this season. Dan Carr, who had an absolutely fantastic game, I have to say, made it 4-0 with a tap-in. Really bullied the Bray back four throughout, especially after Conor Kenna sending off, but we really need to see that on a more consistent basis from Carr. And Dave McAllister rounded things off nicely in front of the Hoops faithful with a 30-yard strike to make it 5-0. A very, very disappointing day at the office for Martin Russell, but I'm sure he'll feel that that red card certainly didn't give him much chance of picking up a result in his first game in charge. Cork City had a 2-0 win at the Showground. Sligo Rovers again drawing a blank here. And similarly to Bray, Sligo got off to an appalling early start here, 52 seconds in, and Kieran Sadlier scoring a very cheap goal against his former club. It was very unorganised defending from Sligo, and not the first time we've seen something like that this season. Rhys McCabe shot narrowly wide from the edge of the box soon after, and he had another one again soon after that that went wide. It just goes to show, folks, really, that McCabe needs to be playing higher up for Sligo this season than where we've seen him. He's their most creative player, in all honesty. And especially when you see the lack of a real focal striker there, you need to be getting creative players on the edge of the box, and McCabe certainly offers that. Cawley blazed one over a volley from inside the box when he should have done better for Sligo just before half time. After the half time break, Mark McNulty pulled off an absolutely fantastic save to deny Sligo an equaliser, but that missed chance would come back to haunt Sligo. Slack finished in, a more poor defender was punished. A cross was allowed to come in from wide when it really should have been snuffed out. And there was Graham Cummins to head home in fine fashion. 2-0 to Cork, and they were never going to let it slip from there. But again, this was a game that showed Sligo are really, really lacking that number 9 despite Adam Morgan's goals early on in the season. To Dalymount Park now, where it was another disappointing day at the office for Bohemians, beaten 2-1 at home by Derry City. Another early goal in this game, it was Aaron McInniff with a magical through ball to Rory Patterson, and he gave the Candy Stripes the lead at Dalymount. Patterson then was lurking at the back post from a corner to make it 2-0, a real poacher's finish there from the Derry man. Derek Pender then had some good footwork in midfield, got past a couple of Derry players where he skied his long range effort over the bar right on the stroke at half time. Both really should have pulled one back then at the start of the second half, but Ian Morris headed wide from inside the 6-yard box when it looked easier to score. McInniff then should have had his second of the game, but he blazed wide after some good footwork inside the Bohemians box. Shane Supple then pulling off an excellent save from Rory Hale, who was a real threat throughout for Derry. JJ Loney off the bench for Bowes, he got a strike from 18 yards to give them hope going into the last couple of minutes, but Derry seen it out probably in a more direct fashion than we're used to, but I think it was all about Derry getting back on track and picking up a big away win here, and that was largely thanks to the efforts of Aaron McInniff. And you just wonder how much longer Derry are going to hold on to him. He's been absolutely superb this season, 11 goals so far, this 10 goals this season, and an assist there for McInniff in that game too. Waterford 2-0 winners over St. Pat's at the RSC. This game started off with Markey hitting the crossbar for Pat's. The ball bounced on the line but away to safety. Extremely unlucky for the Saints there. Then came the turning point, similarly to Bray with a red card. It was a red card here for Pat's as Kevin Toner got himself in a bit of a tangle. Ended up committing a last man foul on Akinade, who in truth bullied St. Pat's throughout the night. And it was a red card for Toner, not the first time he's let his team down this season, and it's probably something we're going to see from young players. They're going to make mistakes like that, and unfortunately it would haunt Pats. Courtney Doofus, who unfortunately looks like he is away, he's going to be leaving Waterford after this weekend, his loan spell ending there. He headed straight at Barry Murphy when he really should have scored. Some good wide work from McInnady there on the wing, but Doofus did get his goal then soon after. It was a tap in after McInnady hit the bar with a header. And then Akinade returned the favour. He punished some bad defending from St. Pat's, and he turned it home after being played in by Doofus. Ryan Brennan had one disallowed then for the Saints, but Waterford held on for a 2-0 win, and Akinade there, as I said, was absolutely unplayable at times. And if he can continue those performances into the second half of the season, then maybe the loss of Courtney Doofus won't be as badly felt as people think, but you'd have to imagine it's going to hit Waterford hard. Obviously Noel Hunt coming in there, but I don't think you'd class him as a natural striker really, and there'll be issues over his fitness, or question marks I should say, over his fitness, having struggled with injuries in the last couple of years. We'll go to Oriel Park now, and it was a 4-0 comprehensive win for Dundalk, Stephen Kenny's side, over Limerick FC. Another hat-trick for Patrick Hooban. Game started off with Adorjan, who's been in fine form in the last couple of weeks. He had his header saved after Limerick had switched off at the back. It was all Dundalk pressure early on. Michael Duffy missing a one-on-one chance after a beautiful backheel flick from that man Hooban playing him in. Hooban then took control and struck a fine volley from the edge of the box, but that was saved by Brendan Clark, who also has been in great form for Limerick in recent weeks. But it was Limerick who could have taken the lead in this one. Robbie Benson forced to clear a header off his line from a Limerick set piece. But the luck would go the way of Dundalk soon after. It was a deflection off a Hooban shot, pinball in the box, and it resulted in a goal. It was Hooban, of course, that got that one. He then got a second from the penalty spot after some really mindless defending from Duggan, it must be said, from Limerick. The third goal was the goal of the game and one of the goals of the weekend. A beautiful step over from Robbie Benson, allowing the ball to run to Adorjan, and he hit it off his left foot into the top left-hand corner. An absolute cracker of a goal. And Dylan Connolly then rounded it up by hitting a nice low cross into Patrick Hooban, who was there to tap in and get his hat-trick and all 3 points for Limerick. But the scoreline certainly a bit harsh on Limerick, and Stephen Kenny was quick to commend Limerick for their performance on the night. And I think if they can put in similar performances in the coming weeks, we'll see Limerick picking up a few surprise results. We're going to hear now from Adrian Taff from LMFM, who is a Dundalk FC supporter. So folks, we're joined on the line now from LMFM in Dundalk, or in County Louth, I should say, but they cover both Dundalk and Drogheda United. We're joined by Adrian Taff. Adrian, thanks very much for joining us here on Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Thanks very much, Kieran. I listen in every week. Delighted to be asked.
Thanks very much, Adrian, and LMFM likewise, doing a great service for football there in the Louth region. So it's been a great start to the season for Dundalk, but despite that, they find themselves in second behind Cork City. I'd imagine that's a slight frustration, but overall, performances-wise, Dundalk have been superb so far this season.
Yeah, I think the signs have been very good in recent weeks for Dundalk. Look, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think if you'd told Stephen Kenny at the start of the season that before the break his team would have beaten Cork, gone 8 games without having conceded a goal at the start of the season, and would have enjoyed a 7-game winning run at some point, I expect he might have expected to be top of the table with a healthy points advantage rather than second in the league and a point behind Cork City, you know. So it's been a very strange season in that respect, you know, because the results have been very good. The football on the whole has been very good and has been improving, I have to say, in recent weeks. Not that there was much wrong at the start of the season, but early on in the year, you felt that when Dundalk went behind, that they were maybe struggling a little bit for a little bit of creativity or to open the door, unlock the door on defences. But in recent weeks, when they've gone behind, and I'm talking about against good teams like Derry City and Shamrock Rovers, Dundalk have responded and responded well and swept aside both of those teams. So the signs are very good for Dundalk. I think that they're clicking more often in games. There's a lot more fluidity there in games. Things are coming together, particularly in the final third more often for them. And I still don't think they've hit top level yet. And I think Stephen Kenny will tell you that. I know Vinnie Perth, the assistant manager, said that to me last week. There's still a lot more improvement left, I think, in this Dundalk team, which might be a concern for the rest of the league. But then I'm sure that John Caulfield will probably tell you the same about Cork City as well.
Yeah, and that's certainly something we've been saying here each week on the podcast. I don't feel either side has reached anywhere near top gear yet. But at the moment, 9 wins in a row in all competitions for Dundalk. Incredible plus 44 goal difference after just 22 games. 9 clean sheets so far this season. But as we said, that still hasn't been enough to get ahead of Cork. Would it be too much to say just before this mid-season break that this game against Derry and then obviously that game against Cork after the break, that these two games could be hugely defining in terms of the title race?
Absolutely. I think particularly that Cork game. Look, at the end of the day, Dundalk, every point is so valuable. You can see that. Like Dundalk are trailing by a point after a great we're almost two-thirds of the way through the season. Even after such a run of decent performances, decent results, plenty of goals, not many conceded, Dundalk still find themselves a goal behind. So every point and every goal is so valuable. So Derry City on Friday night, as you say, hugely important. Derry City will be smarting from the last time that Dundalk were up there. They'll be looking to put on a performance, you'd imagine, for the fans at the Brandywell, and they're coming off the back of a decent result themselves last time out. But it's hugely important for Dundalk. The Cork City game after the break, I think everybody is starting to really feel now that perhaps the games between the two sides, the Cork City-Dundalk matches, there's two of them left. One in Oriel Park, obviously, first game back, and then that one late in the season against Cork City. And they are more than likely going to be the defining games in the season, you have to imagine, just by the way things have panned out and they've been, you know, so pivotal already. You know, Cork City getting that win last time out down in Torrens Cross in a game that Dundalk would probably argue they didn't deserve to lose. I think they deserved a draw and might even have edged it in terms of chances on the game. First game in Oriel Park was much more clean cut. Dundalk were very deserved winners in that one. So they might feel, although they lost the President's Cup against Cork, and although they lost the last time out, they probably edged that game. Dundalk might feel that maybe they're maybe turning the tide a little bit against Cork, who had enjoyed dominance over them in recent season. And Stephen Kenny would be certainly hoping that in the return after the break, that he can set down a real marker for what's left of the season.
Adrian, it's that time of the year where we have to talk about transfers. I know LMFM were the ones that broke this big transfer story that Dundalk were interested in the possibility of bringing Patrick McElhenney back to the club from Oldham. But from reading reports this week, it seems Oldham want a fee in the region of £50,000. Dundalk look unwilling to pay that, but given the financial crisis at Oldham, that fee could drop. If it is to drop to even anywhere near 30,000, would you envision maybe Stephen Kenny could be tempted to bring McElhenney back to the club?
Honestly, I don't know the figure that Dundalk would be tempted at. Look, we know the sort of money they paid for Dylan Connolly, and I imagine that Dundalk would probably look at Patrick McElhenney, giving his history with the club and what he's done at the club in the past, as a more of a surefire bet than Dylan Connolly. So you could argue that if the money's there, that maybe they might be more prepared to spend it. But they have players in that position now. They have filled that position to some extent with the likes of Ronan Murray coming in, Christian Adarjan coming in, starting to play well for the team now. Murray has started the season in the side, but has been out of the team in recent weeks. And then Jamie McGrath in the position as well that Patrick McElhenney likes to operate too, and has done very well this season and has continued his development with Dundalk this season. Looks like he's going to be a really top player for Dundalk, you know. So unless McElhenney is prepared to maybe to go wide on the right-hand side. I know he's played out in that position before in the past, but Dylan Connolly himself is starting to look a bit more like a Dundalk player in recent weeks. Might have got man of the match the other evening against Limerick, but for Pat Hogan scoring three goals for Dundalk. So it's an interesting scenario. He's a top player. We all know his quality. Stephen Kenny loves him as a player and probably loves him as a person too. He's a lovely lad, Patrick. But so I think if the opportunity presented itself, I think Dundalk, in spite of the fact that they might deny any interest, I think if all the ducks came into a row, I'd imagine Dundalk would have to be interested and would be interested. But quite what the figure would be that would interest them, I can't be sure, you know.
And interestingly, Shamrock Rovers are now been linked with Patrick McElhinney, and obviously they're going to have money going around at the moment with the sale of Graham Burke to Preston. But another man that Dundalk look almost certain to sign at this stage is Georgie Kelly from UCD, the top scorer in the first division. But it looks like he may remain with UCD till the end of the season, which is going to disappoint other first division fans, because I think a lot of people feel if Georgie was to go from UCD that maybe the wheels might come off slightly there. But it certainly will be a fine addition to Dundalk, let it be in this summer window or at the start of next season.
Yeah, look at the man knows how to score goals, doesn't he? You know, Dan, it's a priceless attribute to have, and I'm sure that he'd be a good addition for Dundalk, and certainly is some sort of backup and down the ropes behind Pat Hogan. He's not going to be easy to move Pat, and Stephen has played this one man up front formation for a good many years now, so it's hard to see Georgie coming in and playing up front alongside Pat Hogan. So. It'll be a case of him coming to the club, I imagine, and developing. That one looks a more surefire thing, obviously. It looks like that one is going to happen. The information is that that deal has been pretty much agreed between the two clubs. As you said, it's just a matter of when it happens. And I know from covering Drogheda as well, I'd imagine Drogheda would love to have seen him. And I know yourself, from the Longford perspective, would love to have seen him leave UCD at this stage. It would have had a huge impact, I imagine, in the first division and opened the door a little bit more for the teams behind UCD. But Georgie Kelly looks to be a huge prospect. And I think it's good business by Dundalk nipping ahead of everybody else in the queue, maybe to tie him down.
And finally, Adorjan, there seems to be a bit of confusion online from one fan to another on whether he will stay with Dundalk past this summer break. Have you any information on that?
I do believe that his agreement with the club does expire, as far as I'm aware, in July. I haven't heard whether they're likely to keep him on or if he's minded to stay on with the club. I will say that he's improved in recent weeks, and the last couple of weeks I thought he's walked, apart from his ability on the ball, I thought he's worked really hard for the club, and he's starting to show a frame of mind that suggests that he might be interested in staying, but quite exactly what the lie of the land is on that, I'm not too sure at the minute.
Finally, Edwin, we'll end it by talking about the new ownership at Dundalk, Peak Six. Have you had much interaction with the likes of Mike Tracy there? I know he's been very open in speaking with supporters at games, especially away fans. They seem very eager to get out and make themselves known to supporters, but I'm sure everyone would love to see a bit of movement on Oriel Park in the next couple of seasons.
I know, look at he has been very visible in Peak Six, and I think that's probably the most encouraging part of Peak Six ownership of the club so far, and that is that they haven't just lurked in the shadows behind the club. You know, they have been very visible, the likes of Mike Tracy and Jordan Gardner as well, you know, and Mal Brannigan coming in as well. So I think that's fairly encouraging. I do think the facilities, obviously it's an issue that Peak Six will be aware of, that the Dundalk supporters and away supporters coming into the club are very concerned about. It was very much front of mind for Dundalk supporters before the club came in because of the money the club earned in Europe in 2016. All the talk was about how that money could be used to progress the club in terms of facilities and a legacy, I think, from that cup run as well. You know, so these guys have come in. They're going to take a longer-term view. Obviously, this is what they said in the very first night in the YDC in Dundalk, that it won't be an immediate short-term job to improve Oriel Park. I do think that the away section will be improved in the short-term, though. I think they're very aware of that. And I think Mike Tracy said elsewhere recently in the last week that he accepts that it's the worst in the country. So I do think that's a priority. They're also doing some work over on the YDC, the Youth Development Centre as well. So there has been a question over the last year or two around Dundalk. Do they redevelop Oriel Park? Do they move elsewhere? The fact that they're potentially going to start spending some money in Oriel suggests that maybe they will look in that direction. But I do think it's going to be a long-term project. But they do seem to be here for the long run. That's certainly the talk, and they're very professional about what they do. I think it's very incumbent on the Dundalk supporters. At the end of the day, these guys are here. It looks like they're here for the long haul, but I think it's incumbent on supporters of clubs. They're the long-term stakeholders in the club, and I think Peak Six would accept this as well, that they're the people who truly own the club, I think, at the end of the day, in terms of the emotional and historical investment in the club. And I think it's up to them that if something isn't happening in the medium term, certainly, or there isn't a plan put forward by Peak Six, that the Dundalk supporters insist on some information or some news in that. But I would expect it in the short term, possibly in the medium term. I do think it's going to take time. They do want to develop things on the pitch. They want to be qualifying not just for the Europa League group stage, but they're very ambitious. They want to get to the Champions League group stage, and that sort of ambition is nice to hear. But so the facilities will take a little bit of time to get where everybody wants them to be. Another factor as well that will put pressure on Peak Six, whether they like it or not, is developments elsewhere. If the Dalymen Park development goes ahead, if St Patrick's Athletic and that ambitious development that they recently suggested or announced, if Drogheda United and the FAI are involved in that one, and that one hasn't gone away just yet, if other clubs start putting in improvements and start getting new grounds, that'll increase the pressure, I think, on Dundalk as well. I think they're mindful of it anyway, and they do seem to be doing things the right way, and let's just hope that that stays front of mind with them.
Adrian, that's been a fantastic rundown on Dundalk. Thanks very much for joining us, and keep up the great work with LMFM.
Thank you very much, Kieran.
Adrian, thanks very much.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by Flomax. For all your compressed air, vacuum and industrial equipment needs, simply visit flomax.ie.
Moving along now to the First Division results from the weekend, and we'll start at the Athlone Town Stadium, where there was another drumming on the cards. Shelburne coming out 5-0 winners at Lizzie Woolen. David O'Sullivan, he had three or more goals in his last four fixtures in a row against Athlone, but unfortunately he only got two this time around against the Midlanders. So a 5-0 win there for Shelburne, with David O'Sullivan getting two of those goals to move him level on goals with Georgie Kelly, who got two in a win for UCD over Drogheda. We'll speak about that in a moment. The next game we're going to bring you, Cabinteely were 1-0 winners against Longford Town. Kevin Knight with a goal from 31 minutes off a set-piece move. Some very, very poor defending from Longford Town. It was a poor performance in all honesty from Longford. The pitch, while it didn't suit them, it was very dry, very bobbly. You really can't make excuses for the performance. It was a total non-show from Longford on the day. I think a big factor in that, we've spoken about it, myself and John, many, many weeks on the show here. Dean Byrne started the game for Longford, looked lively, but he was then forced off with a nasty-looking groin injury. Chris Mulhall came on, and in truth, he offered absolutely nothing up front for Longford. Longford didn't create anything until stoppage time, when a fine double save from Stephen McGuinness guaranteed Cabo the points. Evan Galvin sent off in the 90th minute for Longford for some dissent shown to the referee, and I know his manager Neil Fenn was very unhappy with his player over that. That's Longford's fourth red card this season, so maybe some discipline issues there within the squad. We're going to go now to the UCD Bowl. As I said, UCD, a huge win over Drogheda United. It was a 2-0 victory to extend the gap at the top against Drogheda, who went into this game in second place. Georgie Kelly getting two goals to keep him level on goals with David O'Sullivan. All the talk this week has been about Georgie Kelly and a potential move to Dundalk. It looks like that is going to happen now, as we heard there with Adrian Taff shortly ago there. But thankfully for UCD, it seems as though Georgie may remain with the Students until the end of the season. And if that is to be the case, I don't think you'll find too many that were back against the Students for the title at the moment. Cove Ramblers 2-1 winners against Wexford. A fine result again for Stephen Henderson's side, who have been in fine form since Stephen offered his resignation there and then sat down with the club and decided to make a U-turn, as we heard on last week's show from the man himself. Darren Murphy opened the scoring for Cove from the penalty spot before Christopher met a 2-0 on 74 minutes. Danny Doyle then pulled one back on 78 minutes for Wexford, but it was another win for Cove who are keeping in touch with those playoff places. Finally, Galway United were defeated at home once again, a 2-1 defeat against Finn Harps. Jesse Devers opening the scoring on 11 minutes, but it was Mark Timlin who brought parity in the game on 52 minutes, and Conor Barry with a winner in the 90th minute for Finn Harps to take the pressure off Ollie Horgan somewhat, but pile it onto Galway manager Shane Keegan. And we're going to hear from a Finn Harps fan now in Aidan McAneils. Okay, folks, so we're joined on the line now by Finn Harps superfan. It's Aidan McAneils. Aidan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So in the big news out of Donegal this weekend, Paddy McCourt, it's going to be his last season playing football. He's going to finish up with the Finn Harps before moving on to head of development with Derry City. As a Harps fan, I'd imagine you've really enjoyed watching him over the last couple of seasons.
It's just been a privilege. I mean, the guy is, he's just on a different level to most players you've ever seen in the League of Ireland, never mind the First Division. He may not be as mobile as he used to be, although I think I heard someone say on TV he's the only player in the league who's faster with the ball than without. But he's just magic, and he doesn't get credit for some of the stuff he does. I mean, he is very, very good defensively. He reads the game so well. Like last week against Galway United, we were 2-0 up, and we brought on Paddy McCourt. And that was as much to protect the defence in the absence of Tommy McBride as anything else, because he is just such a good footballer. And then there's his passing, and of course, the dribbling. It's just, he's a whole different level. We're very, very lucky to have him. You know, it was a bit of a fluke in some ways that, you know, we just happen to be the club that's closest to where he lives. Derry City, for some bizarre reason, didn't want him. So he kind of fell into our laps, and it's been absolutely brilliant.
And that goal,
people always appreciate what they have. It's just amazing to watch the guy play football.
Yeah, that goal last season against Sligo Rovers will certainly live in the memory. And for me, if there's ever a goal to promote the League of Ireland, that's the one, really. Even watching him against Longford on the Bank Holiday Monday, he had a quiet game, but every time he got the ball, you just couldn't move him off it. He was fantastic, and that's where we're going to move on to next in terms of Finn Harps. It's been an up and down season so far. Bit of pressure coming the way of Ollie Horgan, but he certainly answered his critics with that 2-1 win away to Galway. What have you made of Harps so far this season?
It's been a very odd season. We've had this before when we come down from the Premier Division, that we take a while to get our mojo back. And in many ways, you could look at, you know, some of what has gone on. We tend to revert to the historical norm, and you look back at the seasons before Ollie came in, you know, we weren't great on a pretty consistent basis. We were in the lower half of the First Division, which is not a fun place to be. It's easy to forget that's the sort of territory we'd been in for a long time when he came in. And obviously, you know, he came in the first season, we got a cup semi-final, and we saw some real very encouraging signs in the league. The next year, we had that spectacular promotion. We managed to stay in the Premier Division, which we generally don't do. We find that very, very difficult. We just don't have the finances. And yet we managed to stay up, and then the league reduced the top division, which also happened to us the previous time we were promoted. It's almost feeling personal at this point. So now we've kind of come back to the norm, and that's hard to take. We're also in a First Division, which I genuinely think is pretty good. There's a lot of decent sides in there. There's a lot of very good footballers sprinkled around. I thought Longford were excellent. I thought when they played us, they were very, very good. But, you know, fans don't tend to give the other side much credit. They expect the home team to just go out and win. We're coming down from the Premier. We kind of felt, well, as supporters, we felt we should be doing better than we are. But we've been inconsistent. We haven't really had that steel consistently that we would have previously had under Ollie until, you know, there's been some really good displays. I felt Shelburne away, where we drew 0-0, was a really good display with a lot of players missing, especially defensively. And then against Galway on Friday night, I thought we made them look very, very poor, and we played some real good football when we got the chance, but it was just the work rate, and we just weren't giving up anything easy to Galway, and it was a very, very satisfying night. And, you know, suddenly the fans were, like, right from the start, and, you know, alcohol was a factor, the fans were very, very vocal and very supportive of the team. The team were, you know, started well, and just there's a great vibe there, and suddenly we're on the up. But, like, that's the First Division this year. Yeah. Everybody's having a bit of a roller coaster. There's only really been, you know, maybe UCD and, to a lesser extent, Drogheda have been, you know, consistently up there. UCD, obviously, you know, Drogheda have been a bit more up and down. But, like, I remember after the Harps game in Longford, there's a lot of people saying to me, that's our season over, you know, it's gone. And after the recent home game against Longford, there's a lot of Harps people saying, you know, that's it, we're screwed, we may as well, you know, just ship out whoever we can in July and call a halt to this one, you know. So I think maybe, you know, people need to appreciate that this is actually a really good division this year, and there's going to be ups and downs, and there's going to be nights where teams just play really well and you don't and you lose and you move on the next week and things can turn around again. I mean, Galway are in despair at the moment. It's not so long ago that they played UCD off the park. It's a really entertaining division, and, you know, apart from Athlone, who, you know, actually managed to get a result against us in probably the weirdest game of football I've ever seen. Not so much a game of football as like some sort of weird Kafkaesque nightmare from which there was no escape. But like all the other clubs, they're capable of taking points off you, and they're, you know, Cove had a bad start to the season. They were very good against us. They worked incredibly hard. Wexford worked very, very hard. You know, the week after getting absolutely tanked, they could easily have gotten something at Finn Park. You know, so there's a lot of decent teams in there and well organised, and there's a fair bit of talent in the division as well. So I thought that lad, Dylan McGlade, I thought he was very, very good, you know. So, you know, we all kind of feel that, oh, we should be up at the top of this division, and you always hear this stuff, oh, it's the worst first division in years. I've heard that pretty much since I started going to the League of Ireland in the mid-90s, you know.
Yeah,
it's always the worst league ever. It's the worst Premier ever. Everything's terrible all the time. Actually, no. It's pretty decent.
I think entertainment-wise, the first division has probably been the division to watch this season, but standard-wise, I do feel there is a large gap between the Premier and the first division. But Aidan, I'd love to get your opinion on Ollie Horgan. There's been a lot of criticism about his style of play this season. What is the supporters feeling? Is it results over performances, or with the players Harps have and the players they brought in the off-season, the likes of the O'Connors? Should there be a more attractive style of football being played on what is a very good Finn Harps pitch, I have to say, this season?
Well, I mean, it's improved a lot recently, but with the weather at the start of the year, it wasn't great. I mean, most pitches weren't, but at times we've played some really nice football, and at times we've just sort of been a bit aimless, and it's been hard to see what we were really trying to do. Yes, there's certainly been supporters unhappy about the style, but, you know, ultimately, results will turn things around, and, you know, I'm probably a bit different to some other fans. Like, I don't really care. I want to see a Harps side who go out and work really, really hard and give up nothing easy. And, you know, everything after that for me is a bit of a bonus. Like, when I started following Harps, we were one of these teams that was like everybody's second favourite. Like, oh, he's played great football, and you were unlucky there. It was always this thing, you know, you were a bit unlucky there. I'm sure your league position doesn't reflect how good you are. I much prefer to be the team that everybody hates playing against. I thrive on your discomfort of other fans going, how do you watch this muck? It's like, well, I don't really care. You know, I just want to see a team that's effective. If we play good football, and we do, we play more football than we ever get credit for. We certainly did in the Premier Division last year. There was a couple of displays, and home to Bowes, a couple of home games against Bowes, home game against Limerick, and Hattie was spraying the passes around with McAleer playing really, really good football, and, you know, lots of other guys contributing too. I don't think we're always as industrial as people say, but I'm probably as biased as the next man, much as we all like to think we're not.
Sadly, Ed, the attendances haven't been great at Finn Park this season. I think it's clear to everyone that the progress has been really slow on this new stadium, and it's badly needed up in Donegal. Have you heard anything, Claude, your ear to the ground in terms of movement on the new stadium?
Well, as far as I'm aware, the matter is on the desk of Shane Ross, Minister Griffin, the junior minister in the Department of Sport. Had signed off on the project. You know, it's all there. It just needs a signature, as far as, you know, with his comments in the Donegal Democrat, where this is coming from. So it's not really clear why there's a delay. It's all signed off. It just needs that final one. So we're hopeful that at some stage it'll get moving. You know, Finn Park on a good night is a great venue, but the facilities, you know, there's no defending the state of them. And obviously we've been in a situation for a long time where we've been waiting on this stadium, so there hasn't been too much done there to improve things. You know, we had a very ambitious project to build a 6,500-seater stadium. You know, that was the peak of the boom at that time. it probably became a little bit of a political football in some ways, and in recent times we kind of got it moving again. So it won't be like, I don't envisage a stadium being built that'll have 6,500 covered seats, but you know, if we had two good stands and terraces at either end, I'd be very, very happy with that. And you know, just to have a better experience for people coming to the games is a huge thing.
Well, Aidan,
so we live in hope.
Aidan, thanks very much for your expert analysis there on Finn Harps. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, and best wishes for the rest of the season.
Thank you very much. Should I throw in that I know Julian Canning quite well?
Yeah, we've just spoken to him, so I'm sure you can. We'll put a wee group chat together for you, maybe.
He's the man who gave me my wife's phone number.
There we go. Look, Between the Stripes, just the matchmaking service, really.
Can I also rant about, why have I never been on Greatest League in the World? I was the guy who pushed that. Dodd should have been on there, and I should have been on there. I pushed it. He came up with it, I pushed
well,
it.
Well, here's a sickener for you, and I'm actually on it this week, so thanks very much for joining us once again, and we'll speak to you. we'll speak to you again soon. I'll put a word in for you with Con and Conan.
Cheers, Kieran.
Thanks very much.
Enjoying the show so far? Why not leave us a review on iTunes? Want something featured on next week's show? Get in touch via Twitter at Between Stripes, or find us on Facebook by searching Between the Stripes. Finally, our new website address is www.betweenthestripes.ie. Enjoy the second half.
Okay, so thanks to Aidan McNeills for joining us on the show, and we will have the First Division weekend previews and our St. Mel's Brewery prediction game coming up for you shortly. We're going to start off though with our Premier Division previews for the weekend, and we'll start with the one at the Brandywell as Derry City entertained Dundalk. Of course, Derry 4-1, they were defeated by Dundalk at the same venue just a couple of months ago, so they'll be looking to overturn that result. In terms of Derry, Aaron McAneff was superb against Bowes, and he's the real creative force on this side. I'm sure the likes of Shields will be looking to sit on him in this game and try and snuff out that threat. But as I mentioned, they were hammered 4-1 in that fixture just a month ago it was. So it's hard to see how Derry can overturn a result like that so quickly. But it has been an unpredictable league this season, so stranger things have happened. Derry have 8 clean sheets this season, which is quite good when you consider Dundalk have 9 so far in the league. So the issue with Derry seems to be that when the wheels come off, they really do come off. 6-1 defeat against Rovers, 4-1 against Dundalk, as we've mentioned, 5-2 against Pats, 4-0 defeat against Waterford, and a 4-2 defeat against Cork. They've conceded 37. That's more than Sligo, Pats and Bowes, who are all below them in the table. So there does seem to be an issue there for Derry. Lost 2 of the last 3 at home, and we all know the Brandywell effect that Derry had, the real bounce they got when they moved into the new ground. So to be losing games in quick succession at home is worrying. Rovers are breathing down their neck now. This is a big pressure game, and with that pressure on Derry, you wonder if they can perform. Dundalk are just in unstoppable form at the moment. 9 wins in a row in all competitions, 9 clean sheets, as I mentioned. Hooban, 18 goals in just 22 league games. That is an incredible start, really, and you can see why people are saying that he should be looked at for an international call-up. And the man I've mentioned on the show already tonight, Dorjan, has really been stepping up his performances in recent weeks, and we'll have to wait and see if he's going to be still with Dundalk until the end of the season. But if not, he might be looking to sign off with a big performance here. You'd have to go with a Dundalk win in this one, and that's what I've gone for in the St. Mel's Brewery prediction game. And as I mentioned, John Breyer is away tonight, and he didn't send in his predictions in time, so someone has played on his behalf. I'm not going to name that girl. You can probably guess who that was, but she's also gone for Dundalk, and she's from Dundalk, so I'm sure you have a fair guess now of who that is. No bias in that decision at all, I'm sure. We'll move on to the next fixture, Limerick against Shamrock Rovers. As we mentioned, a solid performance from Limerick against Dundalk, despite the 4-goal defeat. They have no win in the last 4, but as I said, they are showing signs of that a result may be coming, and they did pick up a 1-1 draw in Tallaght earlier this season. So could this be another banana skin for Stephen Bradley? The injuries are really mounting up for Limerick at the moment. As we know, Conor Clifford is the latest injury casualty in that side. He's going to be out by what looks to be 4 to 6 weeks. They've had no goal scorer since Danny Marcy went off injured earlier this season. And he was the goal scorer in that 1-1 draw in Tala, so that's a worry for Limerick at the moment. At the other end though, Brendan Clark has certainly been keeping them out as much as he can. Superb performances from the former St. Pat's goalkeeper. So he's always going to give them a chance if he's on his top form. The interesting stat in this one, it's one win in 11 at home for Limerick, and it's one win in 10 away for Shamrock Rovers. So it is a hard one to call. But when you're looking at Shamrock Rovers, obviously Gavin Bazunu expected to play again. Can he put in a good performance away from home, the 16-year-old? Burke is back with a bang after his international duty with two goals against Bray. As I mentioned, Carr was unplayable at times in that game. He needs to do it on a more consistent basis. And if he could start getting a couple of goals against the likes of Bray, against the likes of Limerick, it might just build his confidence going forward in the bigger games this season. You would have to go for a Shamrock Rovers win. And our guest predictor this week has also gone for a Shamrock Rovers win. Moving on to our next fixture, and it's Bray Wanderers against Waterford at the Carlisle Ground. So as I've mentioned, Martin Russell is in there now in the manager position after Graham Kelly's caretaker 60-day period ran out. All three wins this season have come at home. They were against Rovers, Derry and Pat, so they certainly have pedigree for turning over the big sides this season. They drew 2-2 with the Blues in May, but of course that was with Waterford missing Abora and Heary through suspension at the time. And they did lose 3-0 at the RC in April. The bookmakers make them 5-1 outsiders for a home win here. Waterford 2 wins in 3, and looking back to their best with wins over Derry and Pats, Akinade and Doofus are in an unplayable form at the moment. And with this being Doofus's last appearance in the League of Ireland, you'd imagine he's going to be looking to sign off in style. Matthew Connor played for the Irish colleges and university side at the City Calling Stadium midweek, and he went off with about 20 minutes to go, but he kept a clean sheet during his spell on the pitch, and he got a clean sheet against Pats as well. And obviously he's come in for Vigro, who's loan ended last week, and that's going to be a big boost to the Blues goalkeeper there. A win for Waterford could leave them 9 points clear of Derry. That would go a long way to securing European football for next season. So I have gone for a Blues win, but our guest predictor has gone surprisingly for a Bray one. So let's see if there's method in the madness there. Our next fixture is St. Pat's against Sligo Rovers. 2 wins in a row for St. Pat's were followed by 4 straight defeats against Rovers, Cork, Bray and Waterford. It's that fixture against Bray that really sticks out. That was a very disappointing defeat for Liam Buckley's side. That bad run of form, 4 defeats, as I mentioned, has allowed Rovers to leapfrog Pat, so they really do need to get back to winning ways here. Only one of those 4 losses have been at home, interestingly. 6 wins from 10 at home, so that's good home pedigree form for St. Pat's. Gives them a chance here of getting all 3 points against a very poor Sligo side so far this season. Sligo's away form, though, hasn't been too bad. 3 of their 5 wins has come away from home, so they are a dangerous opponent away from home. But I think the Dan stat in this one, if you're going to be a betting man and look at your stats and pick a team either way in this fixture, the last 65 meetings, Pats have won almost half of those. They've won 30 to Sligo's 15. And at Richmond Park, that record is even better for the Saints. They've won 20 of the 31 meetings, which is a 64.5% win rate. Sligo's last win was in 2015 against Pats. So I've gone for a Pats win, and our guest predictor has also gone for a Pats win. That leaves us with just one more fixture to cover, and that comes at Turner's Cross. There'll be a huge buzz of anticipation. Damien Delaney will most likely be at the ground, obviously not free to play until July 1st, but I'm sure that's going to increase the gate by a significant number, despite the World Cup kicking off, as we all know. Totally contrasting form between Cork and Bohemians this season. Cork have won their last 6, whereas Bohs are winless in their last 6. Cork need to win this one if they're to go in at the mid-season break ahead of Dundalk, and obviously with playing Dundalk in the first game after the break, that could be quite a significant advantage to have going into that game. Winning 5-0 against Bohs on aggregate from 2 meetings this season, so they've had no issue turning over the Gypsies so far. Graham Cummins looks to be back in good goal scoring form. Sadler and Shepherd have stepped up their performances significantly in recent weeks, and with the European draw coming as well, and that news around Damien Delaney, there's a real bounce about Cork City at the moment, and you'd have to go for a Cork City win, as I have and as our guest predictor has done. But we'll move on to the First Division fixtures now in a moment, folks. But before we do that, we're going to hear from Rebel Radio's Kevin Galvin, who is a diehard Cork City supporter. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're joined on the line now from the Evening Echo and the Irish Examiner, and also from the Rebel Radio podcast. It's Kevin Galvin. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Kieran. I was on earlier on, and great
to see the sort of progress that you guys have made since I was last on the show.
Yeah, thanks very much, Kevin. As always, we love to pride ourselves on fan interviews, and tonight been a fan special. We thought we couldn't do the show tonight without speaking to someone from Cork City, top of the table at the moment, but I think all of the podcasts out there at the moment are going to be talking about the big news from the week. It's the signing of Damien Delaney for Cork City. What's your thoughts on this big transfer deal?
Yeah, I mean, absolute shock, total surprise, to be honest with it. I mean, the story broke on the Irish Examiner on Friday morning, and then there were kind of obviously murmurs on our forum about that it might actually be true. But to be honest, personally, I couldn't believe it. It just seemed too good to be true. Like a guy who's played over 30 games in the Premier Division in the last five seasons. I know last season injury problems, but you know, he's proven himself across a very, very long career in England. Has made international caps. Even recently, had international caps for Ireland, and was going through somewhat of a kind of a late renaissance in his career. Up until last season, and it's so great for us to get him. I mean, he's 36, he'll be 37 in July, still has a few years left of him, certainly at this level. And I know that Wayne Hennessy, when he left, was talking on his Twitter about kind of, you know, the voice, the leadership, the leadership qualities that he brought to the dressing room at Selhurst Park. So if he can do that to a team in the Premier League, you can only imagine the sort of effect that he'll have on what is a very young defence that we have down on Leaside.
Yeah, because you mentioned there that Damien Delaney didn't feature a lot last season in the Premier League, but going back to the season before that, I can remember there was a huge call from a lot of Irish supporters that Damien Delaney should be in, not only in the Irish squad, one of the starting back two. So that just tells you the quality of the player, and that he's certainly not coming to Cork City past it, so to speak. It's very exciting to think what he could do in this division.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I know that Damien's dad is a huge Cork City fan as well. Damien was a massive Cork City fan. I presume remains so. He still goes to all the games whenever he came back in the summer. So, I mean, it's not a case of a guy coming home and picking up a quick buck. As you said, he got offers to stay in England. So he's really coming home. He wants to come home. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he wants to finish his career with Cork City, where he started it, and has just been, you know, everything points to really great stuff. He was talking a lot in the press as well about the sort of the club itself and the sort of moves that we've made, sort of development that we've had since he was last there. And I mean, even just hearing that, a player of his caliber, a player who's given so much experience at such a high level, to be turning around and praising the club and saying that he wants to come to Cork City because of the moves that we're making on and off the field. Mm. It's just such a fantastic advertisement for our club. And I'm absolutely sure if Damien can stay injury-free that he will have a massive impact, not just on this season, but going forward as well with the young players that we have in the squad.
And of course, we're speaking here just 8 days before the European draws. So again, this is a great time for everyone involved in Cork City.
Yeah, it is. It's a very exciting time. I mean, you know yourself from when Longford are in Europe. It's extremely exciting time. The European draws probably even more exciting than the actual games themselves in a way, because you know that you're going to be travelling over there. You're kind of seeing which European country you're going to go to, and just bringing it back to Damien as well. Like, Damien hasn't actually, even though he's had a very long and very career in England, he hasn't really won anything significant at senior level. So it's a real opportunity for him to come home and win a trophy as well. And obviously, as he said himself, playing Champions League football for him and all those players is going to be fantastic. It's only the third time that we've been in the Champions League. Last time round, we made a pretty good fist of it. We actually beat Apollon Limassol in the first round and then went out, I think, to Red Star Belgrade, if memory serves me correctly. But it's just, you know, it's going to be fantastic for us, and particularly that we kind of get parachuted into the next round of the Europa League. If we were to get a favourable draw in the first round of the Champions League, and then, you know, even if we got knocked out of the second round, you'd still be into the third round of the Europa League, and you're talking the money there, then it begins to skyrocket to phenomenal figures. And I'm confident, to be honest, with this football club and the way it's set up and the way we have our financial systems in place, that if we were to make the money off the back of something like a Europa League group stage or something like that, that then that money would be put to really, really good use. And I think we would see the benefits of it more than you might have seen with a club like Shamrock Rovers, I'd say.
Yeah, and of course, we've seen reports in recent days that the UEFA money has really gone up again this year. It's just more and more money coming into the game for European clubs every year. So if Cork City could go on a good run, it could be really something like we've seen at Dundalk. It could be a whole change for the club going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in a league that has very little prize money banging around, and it finds it very, very difficult to attract sponsors, sort of European money is absolute gold dust. And I suppose we benefit as well from the fact that, you know, we have a sort of we've always had some sort of a hardcore support of in and around 1,000 to 1,500 that have kept us going through the difficult stages, which not all clubs are, you know, I suppose they don't have the luxury of that. And you know, I mean, for a club like Cork, it just takes over the city when it happens. We're a one club town. We're the only show in town, really. I know the Cove Ramblers are down there, but that's very much a kind of a locally East Cork, Cove, Middleton kind of thing, and doesn't so much affect the city. So really, it gives us a massive potential, not only in terms of attendances, in terms of, as you said, the prize money, but it gives us a real potential to, I suppose, you know, put Cork City in the psyche of the Cork sporting public, so that going forward in years to come, that people will, you know, consider themselves Cork City fans. They won't see it as a kind of a whole League of Ireland in a way that a lot of other people around the country do. People are already here. It's actually, even in the last couple of months, the amount of Cork City jerseys I've seen around the town is phenomenal. I mean, I can't go a day without going into town or going into one of the shopping centres around Cork and seeing people strolling around, men, children, you know, women, girls in Cork City jerseys and sporting Cork City merchandise. So it shows you that after all the difficulties that we've had over the last couple of years and the reputation that was kind of thrown away by the likes of Tom Collin and Arcaga back in those dark days, that reputation is really being built back now, and something like European football, Champions League football is going to be absolutely huge again for you know, I suppose, further building our reputation in the local area.
Yeah, and it's fantastic when you hear that. And I spend a lot of time in Dundalk, as our listeners know, and it's the exact same up there. You can't walk down the street without seeing Dundalk merchandise everywhere. And for me, that comes from Longford. And you almost get looked at with 10 heads when you walk down the street with a Longford Town top on. It's totally alien to me. So to hear stories like that and to see the brand as such growing, it really is fantastic to hear, Kevin. But just in terms of a European run for Cork, is there that extra incentive there, considering the Shamrock Rovers have got on a run and got into the group stages, considering Dundalk's great run recently? Is it now for Cork to go out and prove that they can to match those sort of exploits?
Yeah, certainly from a supporter's point of view, or, you know, I'm sure there's a certain jealousy in the fact that Rovers and Dundalk have been there. I know that Cork City fans, or Cork people in general, have this reputation of being slightly entitled about their teams, and they kind of expect us to be, you know, doing what everybody else in the country is doing. So certainly a run in the Europa League group stage would be phenomenal. It would certainly open questions about the use of Parky Cueve, the redeveloped Parky Cueve, and put a little bit of pressure on the Cork County Board in terms of making their stadium available, which I know has happened recently with this Daly and Miller charity match, which is happening at Turner's Cross, and talks of that. That might be switched as well. So that's always good as well. I mean, you want to kind of put pressure on the people who have those sort of facilities to make them available for you. And you know, the more lobbying you can have for that as a League of Ireland club, the better. And, you know, just generally, I think, you know, like with the way we are at the moment, things are really looking up for us. And going into, you know, I suppose we're top of the league again, and we should, fingers crossed, if things go well on Friday, we'll be top by the mid-season break, which means almost two-thirds of the way through the season, we're top of the table. We had a phenomenal start to the year last year. I know we tapered away a bit somewhat, but I think we've earned our place now amongst those kind of top teams in Ireland again. And I think we've proven ourselves in Dundalk, as you mentioned, over the last couple of years, we've really proven that we're again a class above the other teams in the league.
Is there a worry from the supporters' perspective regarding the style of play at Cork? Obviously, we hear a lot of pundits, and especially on other podcasts out there, we hear them criticising Cork's style of play and suggesting that perhaps it mightn't be productive to European football. From a supporters' point of view, is that view shared?
You know, I mean, I think it was in the last couple of games. A couple of weeks ago when things were going particularly well. I mean, it's a results business, and I know that's a very cliche thing to say, but in terms of the league, it is a results business. I think there was a worry in terms of we were giving away the ball a lot, which makes it very difficult in Europe. Obviously, when you're chasing the ball, we even saw that last year against Larnaca, where even with the likes of Maguire playing up front for us, they were just so good at holding on to the ball and sort of, you know, really kind of killing the game.
very difficult for us. But I think anybody who watches Cork City regularly will have seen City over the last 5-6 games. We've won the last 5, and we've been playing some brilliant football. I mean, like, you can talk all you want about the style of play, but we've still scored the second most amount of goals in the league. And if you take away that Dundalk hammering in Limerick at the start of the year, we're only about 3 or 4 goals behind Dundalk in terms of the, you know, hypothetically we'll be behind 3 or 4 goals behind Dundalk. So really we're not that far behind goal scoring wise. It's just that we haven't had any massive victories. I know we won 4-0 away to Bray, but we haven't had a kind of a 7 or 8-0 that Dundalk had against Limerick earlier on. We've scored 15 goals in 5 games since that scoreless draw against Derry, and we have 2 of the top 5 goal scorers in the league in terms of Kieran Sadler and Cummins, both of whom have scored in our last 3 games. So there are definitely goals in the team. The style of play recently has been fantastic. Jimmy Keohane has just taken it to another level altogether with Gerald Morrissey's absence, and that kind of, you know, Keohane, Buckley and McCormack, that kind of midfield really does well. And you know, I just think that now if we're heading into Europe in a couple of weeks' time, if we're playing the sort of football that we're playing at the moment, I don't see there's going to be a huge issue.
And finally, Kevin, obviously the mid-season break is a very contentious point among supporters. Some people think it's good for the players, some people are totally against it. But what the positive is in this mid-season break is the first game after in the league is going to be the big one in League of Ireland football. And I know people talk about the Dublin derby, but the last couple of years, there's been no doubt that the showcase piece has been Cork City versus Dundalk. And with the title race so close again this season, that's looking like an absolutely monstrous game to kickstart the season again. You must be excited for that one.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. I mean, it's a really exciting period just after the mid-season break for us. We have Europe and we have the Dundalk game, and then obviously Europe after that. It's funny because actually we played Dundalk just before the mid-season break last season in Oriel Park, and I suppose that was really kind of the defining game of the season where Maguire scored, was it 2 or 3 goals, I think, up at Dundalk in front of Martin O'Neill. And it was our second win of 3 against Dundalk that season. I think this has the potential to be that again if we could pull out a similar performance. I know we underperformed against Dundalk away from home. We've had a couple of disappointing away performances. Limerick springs to mind, and obviously that defeat against Shamrock Rovers as well. But the thing about, we always seem to raise our game against Dundalk for the vast majority of the case. We beat them at home this season, even though we weren't playing that well in that period. We still managed to beat them 1-0. And I think that the way we're playing at the moment, if we can carry on some of that momentum into the game against Dundalk at Oriel Park, I think we have a fantastic chance. And if we were to win that, we'd be 4 points ahead of Dundalk. They after them winning their last, whatever, 5 or 6 games or 7 games, that's a massive psychological blow to them as well. So yeah, I think if we can do it, I think it will be a killer blow to Dundalk. But if even a point for us is absolutely more than satisfactory going into Europe.
Well, Kevin, it sounds like it's going to be an exciting and a potentially season-defining couple of weeks pre and post-break for Cork City. We want to thank you very much for joining us on the show, and keep up the great work with Rebel Radio.
Thanks very much, Kieran. And for any Wolves fans who are listening, we'll have live coverage of the Friday's game. Wolves are playing City at Turner's Cross for the last game of the season, so coverage starts at 7:30 if you want to listen in. But thanks very much for having me on, and all the best with the podcast for the rest of the season.
Kevin, thanks very much.
BetweenTheStripes.ie is sponsored by Diaga. Based in Buncrana, County Donegal, Diaga are world leaders in top-class logo and graphic design, website building, film production, illustration, and much more. For further information, please visit Diaga.ie.
Even a co-host like tonight, we're still going to bring you, as ever, excellent First Division coverage here. We pride ourselves on covering both divisions equally here Between the Stripes LOI podcast. And we have our First Division previews for you now, as well as our St. Mel's Brewery prediction game. And John leads 4-1 after last week, but hopefully with him been out of action this week, I can catch up on him. Anyway, moving on to Tyco Park, Shelburne face Cabin Teely in a Dublin derby. Cabo with 3 wins in their last 5, and that shock win at home to Longford certainly gives them a boost ahead of this one. But Shelburne are unbeaten in 10 First Division games. That's quite an incredible record. in the first division. It's been a very competitive league, so to maintain 10 games unbeaten is a great credit to Owen Heary and his players. David O'Sullivan is on fire. He's tied on 13 goals with Georgie Kelly in the first division goal scoring charts. James English, Dale Rooney and Adam Ems are all chipping in for Shells as well this season, and that's something I really like about this Shell side, as opposed to Cavan Teely, who really do rely heavily on Marty Waters. And despite that win against Longford, they really didn't create anything of note, their goal coming from a set piece. So I'd have to go with a Shells win, 3-0 in that one, and our guest predictor has gone for a 2-0 win for Shells, so could that goal be the difference? Moving on to Donegal, we heard from Aidan McNeil's earlier on. Finn Harps hosting UCD in a big clash at Ballybuffet. Both sides with 2 wins in 3. And when you consider just a couple of weeks ago, we were speaking here about Ollie Horgan being under pressure. It's interesting to see that stat. Horgan certainly answered his critics with that 2-1 win away to Galway, and piled pressure on his fellow manager Shane Keegan with that result. As we mentioned, it's Paddy McCourt's last season, so he's going to be looking to go out with a bang and at least get Harps into the playoffs, if not promoted. But likewise, there's so much speculation about Georgie Kelly at the moment. I'm sure he's just going to want to keep his head down and keep scoring goals for UCD. Harps have often been accused of being overly physical this season, but they're facing a UCD side who are probably the fittest side in the first division, and that's down to their fantastic gym facilities that the players have available to them at UCD, and they really are a well-built side, and I don't think Harps will have it all their own way, home advantage here. And if anything, the pitch in Donegal will suit UCD. It's a huge improvement on what we've seen earlier in the season, and with that fact, I would have to say a UCD win, as does our fellow predictor. Moving on to County Cork, where Cove take on struggling Athlone Town. 1 win in 3 for Cove. Athlone have lost their last 3. Cove now just find themselves 10 points outside those playoff places, so a chance here to cut that gap down to 7. Cove really looking for a striker in the transfer window, as we heard from Hendo on the show here last week. They've only scored 14 goals in their 16 games. If they want to be in the promotion picture, then that needs to improve. They could do with a clean sheet as well. They've conceded 25 goals in their 16. Only the bottom two sides have worse records than that, so with this fixture coming against an Athlone side who have been extremely uncompetitive for the majority of the season, Cove could do with a comprehensive win and a clean sheet to go with that. They lead Athlone 5-1 on aggregate from the 2 meetings so far this season, and they've only lost 1 of their last 12 meetings against Athlone. I'm hearing reports that there could be more player departures imminent over the mid-season break in Athlone. And finally, interestingly, there's been 6 red cards in this fixture in the last 15 meetings, 3 for each side. So maybe just keep an eye on that one. The bookmakers make Athlone 14-1 outsiders, and with good reason. Both of us here going with Cove wins. Longford Town looking to bounce back from that disappointing defeat against Cavan Teely. They face Drogheda in a huge game at the City Calling Stadium. That defeat against Cavan Teely leaves Longford 9 points off UCD, and you're just starting to wonder if maybe that's too far back for Longford to be considering themselves as title winners this season, if now just a playoff place would be enough for Neil Fenn. Dean Byrne will most certainly be out of this one. He looks to have done some bad damage to his groin. Mulhall will be a very unpopular starting choice. He really hasn't cut it this season, despite being up on the goal scoring charts with 7 goals, but they've really come in games that haven't mattered, in all honesty. And personally, I'd like to see young Jackson Ryan get a run out. He's an energetic player, looks to be a very skillful player, and would certainly offer a lot more mobility and effort than Mulhall, who's been very poor this season. And from all reports, Neil Fenn looking to bring a striker in now in the next couple of weeks. Shane Elworthy, Jamie Hollywood, Chris Mulhall and Paul Skinner on the slide on the Drogheda team are all facing their former club, so there's that angle to the game which should make things a little bit tasty in the Midlands. Ed Irvine should be back and available for action. He's currently doing his leaving cert. He's been Longford's standout performer in midfield this season. Missed the game against Cavan Teely, and clearly his presence was a huge issue for Longford, who struggled to get their foot on the ball on the day. Longford will be looking to call on that excellent home victory they had over Galway recently for inspiration. Drogheda, well beaten by a classy act in UCD, I have to say. And as I said earlier on the show, if they're to keep Georgie Kelly until the end of the season, I don't think you'll find too many backing against Colly O'Neill's side. They got a late equaliser, Drogheda, earlier in the season against Longford up in Drogheda in a game that Longford really should have won. It's going to be interesting to see the reception Paul Skinner gets. He's a bit of a pantomime villain down in the City Corner Stadium. I'm going to make my prediction and go for a Longford win, as has our guest predictor. But one issue I do just want to raise, and obviously this is just in terms of Longford and Drogheda, but all the games taking place this Friday, I think it's absolutely ridiculous that we're going up here against the Spain-Portugal game in the World Cup. For me, I can't see why the break couldn't have started this week. I think we're going to see some very, very low attendances. Hopefully I'm proven wrong there, but the weather's also taking a turn for the worse, so we could see some quite dismal numbers. We'll wait and see if that materialises. Hopefully it's not the case, but I think that's something that maybe the FAI need to look at during major tournaments going forward. Finally, in the first division predictions, Wexford host Galway. The big story here will be Shane Keegan returning to Wexford. He's not going to be a popular man. He's not going to get a good reception, of course. He left Wexford for Galway following that playoff defeat to Drogheda last season, which seen the Wexford, or the season beforehand, I should say, which seen Wexford Youth relegated. And the news obviously leaked before that game, unbelievably, that Keegan would be going to Galway. Wexford put in a decent showing against Cove, only lost 2-1. But they've only won 2 games all season, which is very, very poor stuff. 16 goals in 16 games. They've conceded 41. They've been extremely uncompetitive, and that's very disappointing from a Wexford perspective. Shane Keegan simply needs to win this game. He's under huge pressure at the moment. As I alluded to earlier on in the show, only 2 wins in 8 away from home. That form needs to improve, and it needs to improve now if Galway are going to keep themselves in the promotion hunt. Wexford only have 1 win at 8 at home, so Galway should have no issue in sweeping Wexford aside, and both of us here have gone for Galway wins. And we're going to hear now, before we wrap up tonight, from Galway United superfan Julian Canny. So folks, we're joined by our first fan interview of the night. Big news this week coming out of Galway. Galway United been linked with a takeover by a Saudi group. So to tell us about that now is Galway United fan and regular podcast guest Julian Canny. Julian, welcome back to the show.
Hey, cheers. Thanks, Kieran.
So, Julian, as I said, there all the talk this week about this potential takeover. Galway United today confirming there is interest in a takeover at the club and that there will be an EGM to vote on the situation. What's the feeling on the ground in Galway?
Yeah, so it's a bit, like, it was obviously totally out of the blue. I don't think anyone knew anything about it until it kind of came out last Friday. It was the story broke, and, like, everyone is kind of going, is this for real? And, like, we've obviously seen it happen at Athlone previously, and kind of thinking it's something the same, but like since then, like there has been, I don't know, a few more details emerged. I think there's still a packet being put together to give to the fans to, so we fully know what we're voting on Monday. But all the soundings are that it is kind of good. Like they're serious. They want to invest in the youth. They want to like build a kind of a training centre for the club. At the moment, like we don't have a proper training facility. Our youth teams are obviously playing like from week to week in a different ground. Like fair play to all the junior clubs who are helping us out there, but it's obviously not ideal for Galway United. And yeah, say they want to invest in the first team as well and get promotion back to the Premier Division. So like everything they're saying sounds great. Like just because it's so, I suppose, out of the blue or obscure that like the Saudi invests in Galway United, a First Division League of Ireland club, there's kind of a bit of just uncertainty about it. But like in general, I think it's great. Like the club really needs a lift at the moment, and like we do need to get back to the Premier Division. The way we've been going at the moment, it doesn't look like it's going to happen this season anyway. But yeah, it's. I don't know, like it should give a boost anyway to what's going on, or at least talk about it. But it'll be interesting to see now next Monday how it gets voted, because like I suppose the other argument is we finally got the club under fans' control, and like it's something I always like to see in terms of, if you look at Cork City, like it's great what they've done, like the Forest down there, and it's a real fan-owned club. I suppose the problem with Galway is we just haven't really got kind of the same momentum that Cork have, that they were starting off in the very bottom, whereas we took over having just been relegated. And I think getting even fans to sign up to join the co-op has been probably a bit more of a struggle than was anticipated. Like I'm not sure the exact numbers, but I don't think it's as many as would have been hoped for. So yeah, it's kind of tricky, because you'd obviously like to keep it in the fans' hands, but like well, these are, I don't know, billionaires or whatever. So like throwing a couple of hundred grand at Galway Galway United, it's kind of like nothing to them.
I think it's going to be very similar to the feeling we had around the league in terms of the Dundalk takeover from Peak Six. There was a lot of scepticism there after recent takeovers. You mentioned that loan, and obviously we go back as far as the absolute farce back many years ago at Cork City. So I suppose there's always going to be that cynicism from people. But then again, as you said, the sounds coming out of this group are right. So it will be interesting to see how it's voted on next week.
Yeah, and like there are plenty of other kind of examples around Europe, like, I suppose, good and bad ones. I think there's some Saudi investors involved in Sheffield United, and to be honest, I'm not sure are they connected to this crowd now, because both were involved in Al Hilal previously in Saudi Arabia, the Sheffield United investors and the ones that come to Galway United. So I'm not actually sure is it the same group or is there any connection, or is it just kind of, it just happened that way that they were both involved with that club. But I think they're one of the biggest clubs in Saudi Arabia. And then, like, there are other cities. I think Malaga, I'm not sure where the investors in Malaga were from, but I know they also invested in the city, like the port area in Malaga there, and I think they built hotels around that. And then kind of when they decided to not put any more money into the football club, they still had all their hotels and their whole new port in Malaga. So potentially something like that could be what they're looking at, the way of investing in Galway in the port or something like that. But it's all very interesting. But I think we will need to see more before we can kind of make an informed decision on that, whether to go ahead with it or not.
Obviously, Galway are a long way from that at the moment. Shane Keegan is a man under pressure. Another defeat at the weekend, that came against Finn Harps, and Ollie Horgan was a man under pressure himself going into that one. I've been speaking to a lot of Galway fans after that performance, and I understand it was quite a poor one, and it seems the home performances have been very poor this year overall.
Yeah, well, it's like our home form had been good up until we played Drogheda, and then we've lost to Drogheda and lost to Harps, and like I think if you kind of look at our results, like, apart from beating UCD at home, I don't think we've beaten anyone in the top six. All our other wins have come against just the teams below us, like Cove, Cabo, and Athlone. And like the UCD home performance, that was very good. And it was interesting that Shane Keegan, he changed to a back three in that game and was kind of wanted to press UCD kind of high up the pitch. And because they were playing only Georgie Kelly up top, he felt he could go with the back three. And that worked well. And we played really well that day. Got the win against the league leaders, obviously. But then the next week, we were away to Cavan Teely, and he kept the same team. That was fair enough, but we were terrible that day. And like, we were really fortunate to win 2-1 in the end. We were 2-0 up, but like, Cavan Teely had loads of chances. And then our next game after that was Drogheda, and he still didn't change the team. And I couldn't make any sense of not changing the team after the performance against Cavan Teely. But we lost that, and then obviously lost up in Longford, then we were down in Cove where, it was a 50-50 game. We didn't deserve to win, but we could easily have lost as well. So, and then, the defeat to Harps, and like sixth in the first division, it's just not really good enough.
Yeah, and this back three that you mentioned, Julian, it was something myself and John spoke about last week on the podcast, and we were highly critical of it, considering that one of the players in the back three is Robbie Williams, who clearly doesn't have the legs to get around the pitch. Stephen Walsh is the other one who can be caught in possession an awful lot, and Longford fans will know that from his time in Longford when he could barely get in the team under Alan Matthews. And you have to remember that was a very, very poor Longford side, so it doesn't really fill you with hope seeing him as one of the back three at Galway. And it just allowed Dean Byrne, who was starting on the night, just to run at those players and put pressure on them. Galway gave away a lot of balls, and from that, Longford scored goals. So for Shane Keegan to still be sticking with this, it's quite worrying, really. And he's a manager that was criticised last season for being far too gung-ho, not tightening the ship up when it needed to be. And as a result, Galway were relegated despite the nice football they played.
It is fair enough. Like, I mean, as I was saying last season, I think when he took over from Tommy Dunn, or at the end of the Tommy Dunn era, at the end of that season, it was like we were playing poor football. We just about survived, and like, there was a lot of negativity. And then Shane Keegan came in, and like, we were playing a decent brand of football. It was entertaining to watch, but yeah, ultimately we got relegated. And if you look at the players we had, like, we shouldn't have got relegated. If we'd stayed up, I'd say we'd probably be in or around probably fifth or sixth maybe this season, like around Bowes, like, we'd be ahead of, I'd be confident we'd be ahead of Sligo, Limerick and Bray anyway, and kind of a mid-table this season. So it really was disappointing that we got relegated. And then, like, I know there was a lot of change to the squad, so you can't say we should have automatically gone up, but we definitely would have, should be in the top three at the very least this season. Like, it is tight, and as you said in the intro, like, if we beat Wexford now at the weekend, like, we're going to be probably back in the playoffs, because I think a few of the teams are playing each other. But we really need to start putting a run together. I don't think we've managed more than two wins in a row this season. Mm. So, yeah, it's just like, I suppose down, like, I wasn't at the Harps game last week, but I was down in Cove, and you could just see there was a kind of lack of confidence in the team. And it's not necessarily the three at the back, or it's just, I think just kind of players just not, I don't know, not seeing eye to eye and things. And like, you see a lot of them were pretty frustrated, and Shane was very frustrated at the end of that game. And like, I think everyone knows we should be doing better. And yeah, so like, it's probably no harm that we're playing Wexford now and then we have a week off, but we should, even though we're not in great form, obviously, we should still be beating Wexford. Mm. And then, like, having the week off, it might be no harm, and just kind of refresh things and take a bit of a break, and then come back. And then we've got Shells at home on the game after, so that's going to be a huge game, obviously, given Shells are they third at the moment, second or third anyway.
Yeah, flying. We've spoken about Galway's home form. It's been up and down, but away from home, it really has been terrible. Two wins in eight away from home. But as you said, they're playing Wexford, who've only have two wins all season, so you would be expecting a win there. But it would be quite ironic if this was the game Shane Keegan was to lose against Wexford, where I'm sure he's not going to get the warmest of receptions after everything that went on during his departure there last year, that this could be the game that maybe seals his fate, because there does seem to be a lot of pressure coming on the manager at the moment.
Absolutely. Like, that's true. Like, I think, like, it'll be interesting as well with the takeover, that if these guys come in and they are putting money in, will they be happy to stick with Shane Keegan and give him the end of the season? Like, maybe give him a few quid to bring in a few players, or maybe they'll have ideas of their own. I really don't know, but like, certainly the pressure's on. If we don't win in Wexford, I'd probably be surprised if he was a manager for that Shells game, I think.
Julian, that's where we'll leave it. Thanks once again for joining us. Excellent as always, and best of luck for the rest of the season.
All right, same to yourself. Thanks for having me on.
Cheers, Julian.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by Flomax. For all your compressed air, vacuum and industrial equipment needs, simply visit flomax.ie.
Folks, that has been another edition of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. I have to say, it's only when you don't have your co-host you realise how difficult it is to try and do this yourself. So thanks to everyone who has stuck with it and hasn't got sick of my voice and listened right through to the end. Obviously, a huge thank to our four guests who made things a lot easier and took the weight off my shoulders here tonight. Just want to give everyone a heads up that I'll be appearing on the Greatest League in the World podcast this weekend. I think I'm right in saying that usually airs on a Sunday. So really, really looking forward to going up to studio on Saturday morning and speaking with Conan Conan. And as someone who's been a huge fan of Conan Byrne as a player in this league for many, many years, even when he was banging them in for Shelburne against Longford on a consistent basis, I'm really looking forward to sharing the studio with him and hopefully giving a bit of recognition to Between the Stripes as well, because I think everyone sees the effort myself and John are putting in here on a weekly basis. And we're really thankful to everyone who's supporting us, especially our sponsors, who of course are Flomax.ie, our main podcast sponsors here, Diageo.ie, sponsor BetweenTheStripes.ie, make sure you check out our website, and of course St. Mel's, who are sponsoring the St. Mel's Brewery prediction game this season. We haven't made a decision yet on whether we're going to be airing episodes during the World Cup. We might just put our feet up and enjoy the world's greatest occasion. We'll see. You'll just keep an eye on our social media pages. Of course, we're on Facebook, Between the Stripes, and we're on Twitter at Between Stripes, as well as having Instagram and Snapchat chat accounts. I'm sure you can get the details to those quite easily online. Folks, until we speak to you again, thanks very much for joining us, and be sure to tune in to the Greatest League in the World podcast this weekend. Thanks very much.
Subscribe to Between the Stripes LOI podcast now on iTunes, Audio Boom, Mixcloud, Pocket Cast or Podcast Republic, and never miss an episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Between Stripes or like us on Facebook and Instagram by searching Between the Stripes. Add us on Snapchat. Our username is BTS1924. While for all the latest League of Ireland news and updates, you can visit BetweenTheStripes.ie. Until next week, thanks for listening.